This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This recording is by Mark Smith of Simpsonville, South Carolina. The Swiss Family Robinson by Johann David Wyss. Chapter 24. As we went along the avenue of fruit trees, I was concerned to see my young plants beginning to droop, and I immediately resolved to proceed to Cape Disappointment the next morning to cut bamboos to make props for them. It was determined we should all go, as, on our arrival at Falcon's Nest, we discovered many other supplies wanting. The candles were failing. We must have more berries, for now my wife sewed by candlelight while I wrote my journal. She wanted also some wildfowl's eggs to set under her hens. Jack wanted some guavas, and Francis wished for some sugar canes. So we made a family tour of it, taking the cart, with the cow and ass, to contain our provision, and a large sailcloth to make a tent. The weather was delightful, and we set out singing in great spirits. We crossed the potato and manioc plantations, and the wood of guavas, on which my boys feasted to their great satisfaction. The road was rugged, but we assisted to move the cart, and rested frequently. We stopped to see the bird colony, which greatly delighted them all, and Ernest declared they belonged to the species of Loxia gregaria, the sociable grosbeak. He pointed out to us their wonderful instinct in forming their colony in the midst of the candleberry bushes, on which they feed. We filled two bags with these berries, and another with guavas, my wife proposing to make jelly from them. We then proceeded to the caoutchouc tree, and here I determined to rest a while, to collect some of the valuable gum. I had brought some large gourd shells with me for the purpose. I made incisions in the trees, and placed these bowls to receive the gum, which soon began to run out in a milky stream, and we hoped to find them filled on our return. We turned a little to the left, and entered a beautiful and fertile plain, bounded on one side by the sugar canes, behind which rose a wood of palms, on the other side by the bamboos, and before us was Cape Disappointment, backed by the ocean, a magnificent picture. We at once decided to make this our resting place. We even thought of transferring our residence from Falcon's Nest to this spot, but we dismissed the thought when we reflected on the perfect security of our dear castle in the air. We contented ourselves with arranging to make this always our station for refreshment in our excursions. We loosed our animals, and allowed them to graze on the rich grass around us. We arranged to spend the night there, and, taking a light repast, we separated on our several employments, some to cut sugar canes, others bamboos, and after stripping them, to make them into bundles and place them in the cart. This hard work made the boys hungry. They refreshed themselves with sugar canes, but had a great desire to have some coconuts. Unfortunately, there were neither monkeys nor crabs to bestow them, and the many attempts they made to climb the lofty, bare trunk of the palm ended only in disappointment and confusion. I went to their assistance. I gave them pieces of the rough skin of the shark, which I had brought for the purpose, to brace on their legs, and, showing them how to climb, by the aid of a cord fastened round the tree with a running noose, a method practiced with success by the savages, my little climbers soon reached the summit of the trees. They then used their hatchets, which they had carried up in their girdles, and a shower of coconuts fell down. These furnished a pleasant dessert, enlivened by the jests of Fritz and Jack, who, being the climbers, did not spare Dr. Ernest, who had contented himself with looking up at them. And even now, regardless of their banter, he was lost in some new idea. Rising suddenly and looking at the palms, he took a coconut cup and a tin flask with a handle, and gravely addressed us thus, "Gentlemen and lady, this exercise of climbing is really very disagreeable and difficult, but since it confers so much honor on the undertakers, I should like also to attempt an adventure, hoping to do something at once glorious and agreeable to the company." He then bound his legs with the pieces of shark skin, and with singular vigor and agility sprung up a palm which he had long been attentively examining. His brothers laughed loudly at his taking the trouble to ascend a tree that had not a single nut on it. Ernest took no notice of their ridicule, but as soon as he reached the top, struck with his hatchet, and a tuft of tender yellow leaves fell at our feet, which I recognized as the product of the cabbage palm, a delicate food highly valued in America. His mother thought it a mischievous act to destroy the tree thus, but he assured her his prize was worth many coconuts. But our hero did not descend, and I asked him if he wanted to replace the cabbage he had cut off. "Wait a little," said he. "I am bringing you some wine to drink my health, but it comes slower than I could wish." He now descended, holding his cocoa cup, into which he poured from the flask a clear rose-colored liquor, and presenting it to me, begged me to drink. It was indeed the true palm wine, which is as pleasant as champagne, and, taken moderately, a great restorative. We all drank, and Ernest was praised and thanked by all, till he forgot all the scoffs he had received. As it was getting late, we set about putting up our tent for the night, when suddenly our ass, who had been quietly grazing near us, began to bray furiously, erected his ears, kicking right and left, and plunging into the bamboos, disappeared. This made us very uneasy. I could not submit to lose the useful animal, and, moreover, I was afraid his agitation announced the approach of some wild beast. The dogs and I sought for any trace of it in vain. I therefore, to guard against any danger, made a large fire before our tent, which I continued to watch till midnight, when, all being still, I crept into the tent, to my bed of moss, and slept undisturbed till morning. In the morning we thanked God for our health and safety, and then began to lament our poor donkey, which I hoped would have been attracted by the light of our fire, and have returned, but we saw nothing of him, and we decided that his services were so indispensable that I should go with one of my sons and the two dogs in search of him, and cross the thickets of bamboo. I chose to take Jack with me, to his great satisfaction, for Fritz and Ernest formed a better guard for their mother in a strange place. We set out, well armed, with bags of provisions on our back, and after an hour's fruitless search amongst the canes, we emerged beyond them in an extensive plain on the borders of the great bay. We saw that the ridge of rocks still extended on the right till it nearly reached the shore, when it abruptly terminated in a perpendicular precipice. A considerable river flowed into the bay here, and between the river and the rock was a narrow passage, which at high water would be overflowed. We thought it most likely that our ass had passed by this defile, and I wished to see whether these rocks merely bordered or divided the island. We therefore went forward till we met with a stream, which fell in a cascade from a mass of rocks into the river. We ascended the stream till we found a place shallow enough to cross. Here we saw the shoe marks of our ass, mingled with the footsteps of other animals, and at a distance we saw a herd of animals, but could not distinguish what they were. We ascended a little hill, and through our telescope saw a beautiful and fertile country, breathing peace and repose. To our right rose the majestic chain of rocks that divided the island. On our left, a succession of beautiful green hills spread to the horizon. Woods of palms and various unknown trees were scattered over the scene. The beautiful stream meandered across the valley like a silver ribbon, bordered by rushes and other aquatic plants. There was no trace of the footstep of man. The country had all the purity of its first creation. No living creatures but some beautiful birds and brilliant butterflies appeared. But, at a distance, we saw some specks, which I concluded were the animals we had first seen, and I resolved to go nearer in hopes our ass might have joined them. We made towards the spot, and, to shorten the road, crossed a little wood of bamboos, the stalks of which, as thick as a man's thigh, rose to the height of 30 feet. I suspected this to be the giant reed of America, so useful for the masts of boats and canoes. I promised Jack to allow him to cut some on our return, but at present the ass was my sole care. When we had crossed the wood, we suddenly came face to face on a herd of buffaloes, not numerous, certainly, but formidable in appearance. At the sight I was absolutely petrified, and my gun useless. Fortunately, the dogs were in the rear, and the animals, lifting their heads and fixing their large eyes on us, seemed more astonished than angry. We were the first men probably they had ever seen. We drew back a little, prepared our arms, and endeavored to retreat, when the dogs arrived, and, notwithstanding our efforts to restrain them, flew at the buffaloes. It was no time now to retreat. The combat was begun. The whole troop uttered the most frightful roars, beat the ground with their feet, and butted with their horns. Our brave dogs were not intimidated, but marched straight upon the enemy, and, falling on a young buffalo that had strayed before the rest, seized it by the ears. The creature began to bellow and struggle to escape. Its mother ran to its assistance, and with her the whole herd. At that moment, I tremble as I write it, I gave the signal to my brave Jack, who behaved with admirable coolness, and at the same moment we fired on the herd. The effect was wonderful. They paused a moment, and then, even before the smoke was dissipated, took to flight with incredible rapidity, forded the river, and were soon out of sight. My dogs still held their prize, and the mother, though wounded by our shot, tore up the ground in her fury, and was advancing on the dogs to destroy them. But I stepped forward, and discharging a pistol between the horns, put an end to her life. We began to breathe. We had looked death in the face, a most horrible death, and thanked God for our preservation. I praised Jack for his courage and presence of mind. Any fear or agitation on his part would have unnerved me and rendered our fate certain. The dog still held the young calf by the ears. It bellowed incessantly, and I feared they would either be injured or lose their prize. I went up to their assistance. I hardly knew how to act. I could easily have killed it, but I had a great desire to carry it off alive and try to tame it to replace our ass, whom I did not intend to follow further. A happy idea struck Jack. He always carried his lasso in his pocket. He drew it out, retired a little, and flung it so dexterously that he completely wound it round the hind legs of the calf and threw it down. I now approached. I replaced the lasso by a stronger cord, and used another to bind his forelegs loosely. Jack cried victory, and already thought how his mother and brothers would be delighted when we presented it. But that was no easy matter. At last, I thought of the method used in Italy to tame the wild bulls, and I resolved to try it, though it was a little cruel. I began by tying to the foot of a tree the cords that held the legs. Then, making the dog seize him again by the ears, I caught hold of his mouth, and with a sharp knife perforated the nostril, and quickly passed a cord through the opening. This cord was to serve as my rein to guide the animal. The operation was successful, and as soon as the blood ceased to flow, I took the cord, uniting the two ends, and the poor suffering creature, completely subdued, followed me without resistance. I was unwilling to abandon the whole of the buffalo I had killed, as it is excellent meat, and I therefore cut out the tongue and some of the best parts from the loin, and covered them well with salt, of which we had taken a provision with us. I then carefully skinned the forelegs, remembering that the American hunters used these skins for boots, being remarkably soft and flexible. We permitted the dogs to feast on the remainder, and while they were enjoying themselves, we washed ourselves and sat down under a tree to rest and refresh ourselves. But the poor beasts had soon many guests at their banquet. Clouds of birds of prey came from every part. An incessant combat was kept up. No sooner was one troop of brigands satisfied than another succeeded, and soon all that remained of the poor buffalo was the bones. I noticed amongst these ravenous birds the royal vulture, an elegant bird, remarkable for a brilliant collar of down. We could easily have killed some of these robbers, but I thought it useless to destroy for mere curiosity, and I preferred employing our time in cutting, with a small saw we had brought, some of the gigantic reeds that grew around us. We cut several of the very thick ones, which make excellent vessels when separated at the joints, but I perceived that Jack was cutting some of small dimensions, and I inquired if he was going to make a Pandean pipe to celebrate his triumphal return with a buffalo. "No," said he, "I don't recollect that Robinson Crusoe amused himself with music in his island, but I have thought of something that will be useful to Mama. I am cutting these reeds to make molds for our candles." "An excellent thought, my dear boy," said I. "And if even we break our molds in getting out the candles, which I suspect we may, we know where they grow and can come for more." We collected all our reeds and bundles and then set out. The calf, intimidated by the dogs and galled by the rain, went on tolerably well. We crossed the narrow pass in the rocks, and here our dogs killed a large jackal which was coming from her den in the rock. The furious animals then entered the den, followed by Jack, who saved, with difficulty, one of the young cubs, the others being immediately worried. It was a pretty little gold-colored creature, about the size of a cat. Jack petitioned earnestly to have it to bring up, and I made him happy by granting his request. In the meantime, I had tied the calf to a low tree, which I discovered was the thorny dwarf palm, which grows quickly and is extremely useful for fences. It bears an oblong fruit about the size of a pigeon's egg, from which is extracted an oil which is an excellent substitute for butter. I determined to return for some young plants of this palm to plant a tent house. It was almost night when we joined our family, and endless were the questions the sight of the buffalo produced, and great was the boasting of Jack the Dauntless. I was compelled to lower his pride a little by an unvarnished statement, though I gave him much credit for his coolness and resolution. And supper time arriving, my wife had time to tell me what had passed while we had been on our expedition. End of chapter.